about details of this trust building process between the two Koreas. Actually, trust is the key word of foreign policy of Park Geun-hye administration. Trust of the people, trust between the two Koreas, trust between Korea and the global community. The three trust we actually emphasize very much. So there are some strengths and weaknesses of Korea today. Actually, the weakness is the continuation of the division of Korea and also the great power surrounding. We cannot match the surrounding power in terms of physical and as well as the economic sense. And also we have growing expectation of global community, how far and how much we can meet the global community's expectation in dealing with various issues ahead of us. But more serious question, actually, the challenge ahead of us is like the North Korean issue. On the outset, let me say, North Korea problem has become much more complicated and also much more diversified. So not only just conventional threat, but also the WMD threat are on the rise. North Korea is diversifying, actually advancing its WMD capabilities as far as it can. As you know, under Kim Jong-un leadership, North Korea has launched what they call Pyongjin policy, parallel pursuit of nuclear capability and economic development. They want to have a Pakistan model of resolution to be recognized de facto nuclear power and then have economic development of in their own style. But South Korean perspective, that is a kind of nightmare. Kim Jong-un leadership is not going to give up nuclear weapons and also to be in that way as far as he can. So to solve that problem, we actually propose this various, we have made several proposals, but North Korea simply rejected the trust building process from the beginning. So from the beginning of this Park Geun-hye administration, we actually emphasized the security aspect of our policy. The trust building process of South Korean government is based upon the strong deterrent posture vis-a-vis North Korea. So it's kind of similar to what Kim Dae-jung said. Kim Dae-jung said, we are going to pursue sunshine policy, but sunshine policy is based upon our strong defense posture. This is starting point. So Caitlin and I talked about this, why sunshine policy was possible from 1999-2002, because of the victory we achieved in Yeonpyeong Island. That actually assured the Kim Dae-jung administration is not pro-North Korea, it's a bit more security-oriented one. Actually, domestic support was raised because of that fact. That's the first one. So there's a dilemma. How we can proceed or make a development between the two Koreas on one hand, how we can solve this nuclear issue? North Korea is determined to keep the nuclear weapon as far as it can. So still at this point of time, I think they are doing their best to upgrade their missile as well as the nuclear capability. They are in a process of completing the 50 megawatt reactor. That's a new one. Once they completed the 50 megawatt reactor, they are in a position to produce enriched uranium. I don't know exactly the amount, but actually 15 to 20 kilograms per year. That's quite a different story ahead of us if they complete that program. Anyway, that's one. So the other one, that's one. Second issue in dealing with North Korean challenge is like more whether Kim Jong-un leadership would be stable and sustainable. So we have seen consolidation of Kim Jong-un's power over the years very much. So Kim Jong-un seems to be in a position to control the regime in a stable manner. He replaced all his father's generation, all generals with his generation. Now the Hwang Byung-se is the head of this. Hwang Byung-se is the key person, but actually Choi Ryong-hae, of course, his secretary for cultural and sports affairs, actually he is the one who has the real power, I think. That's my personal assessment. Actually, Kim Jong-un has enhanced the party's control of the military. You know, during the Kim Jong-il era, the military grew too much. So actually, Kim Jong-un tried to counterbalance the military's role in North Korean system. So in a process, So that might lead to the some kinds of unstable situation in North Korea, the party versus military conflict over the policy issues. But we have not seen any kinds of any symptom at this point of time. That's only a hunch we can think of into the future. So stability of the Kim Jong-un leadership in political sense is another challenge we have to think about. What about the economy of North Korea? For the past 3 years, North Korea economy has recorded positive growth by pumping in all the capital resources. So they earned a huge hard currency by exporting the labor workers to Russia, China, and other places you can imagine. It is believed they have, it is about 200 to 300,000 North Korean workers working in overseas. They actually has a huge capital revenue for North Korean leadership. I don't know exactly how much they actually earn per year, but anyhow, they are the sources of the hard currency for North Korean leadership very much. So in other aspects, domestically, you can find the proliferation of this the black market and the farmers market or weekend market. That kinds of phenomena help North Korean leadership sustain the current economy very much, because actually North Korean leadership doesn't have a necessity to provide all necessities to the people. People have become kinds of self-dependent in securing the goods and product they need. We estimated about 2 million people died from 1994 to 1997. At that point of time, North Korean people did not have any idea where to go to get what they want. But now they know where to go and how to go and how to get the food. That's the third aspect, like this border trade is flourishing. Of course, Chinese central government is enforcing the sanction on North Korea. But the local government provides the economic or trade with North Korea very much. And what we, in Korean term, what we call 보따리상, is kinds of hand carrying the bag. The trade between on the border actually flourishing very much. So that helps North Korean leadership to a certain degree to sustain the current the policy very much. So that's the current situation in North Korea. But the serious problem right now, among the concerned parties, we don't have much consensus on the policy in dealing with North Korea. China is so much concerned with the sustain of North Korean leadership, while U.S. is preoccupied with non-proliferation issue, while South Korea is so much concerned with denuclearization. So there's slight differences among these three concerned parties. But at this point of time, we are in an agreement in enforcing the sanction. But whether sanction is effective or not, it's questionable. So I always support the sanction because we have to make sanctions workable. But there's also other people are challenging the sanction measures. But nowadays, United States pick up two additional points in enforcing sanction. One is a human rights issue. After releasing the COI report, U.S. has become much concerned with this human rights issue as a leverage to press North Korea much more on this dimension. And the other issue, as you know, the release of the interview actually has highlighted this cybersecurity issue very much. Cybersecurity is the one. So they are doing what they do. Actually, U.S. is much more concerned, putting more pressure upon North Korea. So how we can make a common approach toward North Korea is quite a critical one. At the point of time, we have not talked about what would be the end state on the Korean Peninsula. The Park Geun-hye administration put forward the unification bonanza January this year. So that actually raised a concern, especially in China. What you are talking about, unification, what the end state, what kinds of unification wants. So China is much concerned whether unified Korea is aligned with the U.S. is going to be a challenge for them. So how we can assure the unified Korea policy in the post-unification era is going to determine or influence Chinese position in dealing with the current issue as well as the unification experiment. Of course, the U.S. is very much supportive toward the unification. But we have some doubt on Japan. Whether Japan is supportive toward the unification or not would be questionable. So Abe's approach toward Pyongyang unilaterally in solving this abduction issue actually surprised us very much. So actually it weakened the foundation of trilateral cooperation among Korea, Japan, and the United States in dealing with North Korean challenges. How we can solve it? So that's the critical question. The one of the recommendations I can make, first of all, we have to come back to the basic question of North Korea's challenge and then come up with very long-term and comprehensive approach vis-a-vis North Korea, not just focusing on the issue by issue. So we just usually have a consultation based upon what happened at the point of time. If something happened, for example, if the UAV issue popped up, we come to DC and talk about how we are going to deal with the UAV. If abduction issue or human rights, that kinds of this, issue by issue, lacking this comprehensive long-term objective and guideline, it has been a cause of a lack of coordination among three of us. So I think that we have to look at the long-term view on the desired end state on the Korean Peninsula that actually includes the unification. What would be the most desirable way to achieve unification? And also the unification, not only the matter between the two Koreas, but also matter involves these surrounding countries as well as other countries. Of course, Australia, as one of the 16 sending states, has a stake, has a great interest in achieving and supporting the unification very much. Just let me stop there. I think I spent 15 minutes for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Right now, thank you very much.